Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Alumni Nightline. I'm Mike Pavlichko, the broadcast administrator here at WRSU and Class of 2000. And you just heard a rebroadcast with some very special memories from some players, members of the media. The 1982 AIAW Championship game, Rutgers beating Texas down at the Palestra in Philadelphia. And Dom Savino, our general manager, Class of 2018. Oh, my goodness. Is the chief guy who worked on this. We worked on this a little bit together. Dom did all the interviews. Great stuff on this broadcast, Dom. That was a lot of fun.
Well, it was a lot of fun. Thank you for your compliments, Mike. This team, one of the only national champions in Rutgers history, and it was fun to unravel and uncover a lot of the hidden details about a team that really does not get a lot of publicity.
No, they don't. And I remember as a kid getting interested in Rutgers women's basketball, the Lady Knights, as they were known back then, in pretty much the mid to late 80s. It was the Wicks and Sticks, Sue Wicks era for Rutgers women's basketball with Teresa Grenz as the head coach. And remember some really great teams. And it started not quite with that 82 team. It started a little before that, but reached that climax with that 82 team that really put it on the map against Texas. It was a great listen to that broadcast. Some of the names that you've heard throughout the years of some of the all-time Lady Knight greats. We got to hear from them. And now, Dom, in studio and joining us from South Dakota, we have a couple of members of the RSU broadcast team from that era.
Yeah, it's a bunch of WRSU royalty now on our Alumni Nightline. John Newman, Jeff Sadow, and Jim Berman from South Dakota joining us to recap the 1982 AIAW championship that Rutgers took on, what was it, March 28th, 1982, I believe the day it was. So, guys, thank you so much for joining us. It's a lot of fun.
Thanks.
Thank you. Good to be
thank
here.
Thank you.
Want to go back to that day, and we can start with Jim because Jim was there. What is your recollection of that day?
Well, it was it actually, after it had been a bit of a cold snap, as I recall, it suddenly became a kind of a warm day that day, and it was an exciting day. It was a big day, and you know, I'll tell you what I remember vividly. I remember getting off the train because it was spring break, and that's one of the things that I'm sure we'll dive into. This kind of happened under the cloak of darkness, so to speak, because Rutgers was closed. It was spring break. Everybody was gone. The whole tournament took place in the space of a week, and everyone was gone, so no one was really aware of what was going on. It was before social media and the instantaneous things that we take for granted today. I really wasn't aware of what was going on exactly. I was on spring break, but I tried to find out because I knew that I was going to be assigned to do the championship game if there was a championship game. Found out there was, made arrangements to get to Philadelphia, got off the train, went to the Palestra, and of course, I knew nothing about Texas other than the fact that they were a tremendous team. And they had won 32 games in a row. So I went and found some members of the Texas media. I wanted to become educated on what they were about. And they basically said this. The game is going to be won and lost in the front. They've got Joy Williams. God rest her soul. She passed away some years ago. And Annette Smith, who would later become one of the greatest college basketball players in the country. She's in the Hall of Fame. So two really outstanding players. And that battle against Terry Dorner, June Olkowski, Jenny Hall up front would be the key to victory. I said, great, you know, that makes sense. I said, what about the backcourt matchup? I asked him, you know, what are your thoughts about the Coils? Tell me a little bit about Mackey and Whaley. And they looked at each other and smiled. And they said, Jim, let me tell you this, the deal here. Mackey and Whaley are going to blow away the Coyles. It won't even be close. And I literally, like, was taken aback, and I said, are you serious? Really? I mean, the Coyles are really good. I said, believe me, we've seen them play, and I'm telling you, it will be a complete mismatch. That's where the game will be won. So I walked away from that meeting. I was polite. I walked away kind of rolling my eyes to myself and thinking to myself, either Mackey and Whaley are the two greatest guards anywhere in the country ever, or they have seriously underestimated the Coyle twins.
Well, the delight of retrospection certainly helps here. We know it worked out in that one. Patty Coyle had the game of her life, the MVP of that game, and Rutgers ends up coming out with it. But, Jim, you mentioned spring break, and we can talk to two guys who were on campus and were actually running Nightline that afternoon for us, Jeff and John. What was the atmosphere like on campus? Did a lot of people really even know about the game?
No, I mean, it's interesting you say that. I mean, spring break on a college campus until people start coming back, it was dead. So, and I think my recollection is the same thing. We knew we were coming back and doing Nightline, and you're coming back to a quiet campus, but you knew you had an opportunity for history to be made. So, you know, we're back here listening, and in our conversations about this over the last couple of days, you know, we're remembering this. Like, it's not like we could watch this thing on TV. So the only way that we're, you know, living this is through Jim and Jeff, the broadcast everybody just heard. And it was really interesting to sort of hear the ebb and flow of the game, hear what happened, especially in the second half. And we'll address, you know, June Olkowski and the role that she played in all of this. But, you know, it was even the next day, as I'm thinking about it, when we rang the bell, it's not like it was a standing room only crowd, you know, at Old Queens that day either.
No, and it was revealing to look back at the old television reports from the game and from the bell ringing, and it was very low key. It was not a monumental event, or as monumental as it really should have been. And you know, we didn't even realize what we had experienced, I think, at the time. Now, with 35 years to look back in the rearview mirror, we have really come to appreciate what it was that we went through and what it was that we experienced and how we got there and how revolutionary, to coin a term that is pretty popular here right now at Rutgers, how revolutionary the whole women's basketball program was here at Rutgers. And really, it's a precursor to what you now see on ESPN and the Genos and the UConns of today. And there is that, of course, Chris Daly tie to that, which we could get into.
Well, Jeff, you touched on an interesting point. We've heard a couple of the players that we got to interview say they didn't appreciate in the moment. And you can't fault them. They're 18 to 21-year-old college kids. But they didn't really have a deep appreciation of the moment. They didn't contextualize this and realize that this was the big win for Rutgers women's basketball. But going into that season, there's so many storylines to talk about. The big one, a senior-laden team, and it, looking back on it now, you can kind of get that sense of it was win now. We've got all these seniors who have played together for 4 years, and we've got to get it done now, which they obviously did.
One of the things that was interesting is that they chose between the AIAW tournament and the NCAA tournament. And our recollection was a little fuzzy, but it was very apparent in looking back at the research that that decision had been made prior to the season and prior to the school year. And the folks in the athletic administration, I believe, had the idea to go and stay with the AIAW, and there was some dissension in the ranks, but everybody rallied behind that decision once it was made. In hindsight, we found it made a lot of sense. A, it was a senior team that had a chance to win. B, the Philadelphia roots and the Final Four being played in Philadelphia. You had the coach, Teresa, who was from the area, grew up there, went to school there, the Mighty Max and Immaculata, the first three national champions. She has five players from Pennsylvania who are her starters most of the season. And in that game, you had all five were from Pennsylvania. Were all five from Pennsylvania at the time? Yeah, all five were from Pennsylvania, and they were able to pull this off basically at home. They walked in with an attitude. They those women really wanted to win that game and show the world how good they were.
You know, we have the benefit of now looking back over 35 years, but if you really look at it, it was an inflection point for women's college basketball, period, right? You had the piece that Teresa lived through as a player, you know, the Immaculata, the Queens College, the Montclair State phase. Then you had all these other schools during this period of time, over the 4 years that we were there leading up to this, where the bigger schools started catching the bug. You had the UCLAs with Ann Myers. You had the Kansases with Lynette Woodard. You had Louisiana Tech with Kim Mulkey as the point guard. They started getting a lot of national publicity. When we were there, they would play the Manufacturers Hanover Trust tournament at Madison Square Garden, and they would sell out final games. So it was all leading up to this. Obviously, the NCAA paid attention and saw this as a potential next level revenue sport, and that's why they got involved. And it was the end of it. In some ways, it was the culmination of this group, but it was also the end of an era for women's college basketball, because then Pat Head became Pat Head Summit. Gino Auriemma was hired 3 years later for UConn, and you saw the beginning, the end of that, but also the beginning of what college basketball on the women's side would become. And it was really interesting now to look at back at it 35 years later and see the role that these people played in all of that, and how it was the end of an era, but also the beginning of an era for the sport.
One other thing to that point, we don't give Teresa, and we didn't give Teresa enough credit at the time, and I think now is a perfect opportunity to reflect back. As it turns out, she was the first full-time hired women's basketball coach in the country, in Division I college basketball, as it was at that time. Up until that point, these were faculty members who had tenure, who didn't want to leave their jobs because they had professorships and they didn't want to move around as such. It was not a business. It was a sport, like it was many years ago, on the men's side. So there was that. She was competing. She came on the scene right at the end, right after the Final Four team for the men. So she automatically is now competing to build a product and build a program with these princes of the court who are getting a new building built for them. Something else you have to remember, that even that season and the first two rounds of the AIAW tournament, a handful of games were played at the Barn. They went on to Philadelphia, winning those two games at the Barn. That was not in Piscataway. Their games were parts of doubleheaders at the RAC. If they were at the RAC, they'd be very early or late. The stands would be empty at times. The Cagers came on the scene, and they were instrumental in supporting this team and traveling around the country with them.
You know, I just want to mention something that I've talked to a lot of people about, is that when I had come into Lady Knights basketball, they were at that point now established with Teresa and everybody else that had come, the players to play for her. The men were so bad that at the RAC, the women were the featured game. And the men were the opener. The men were the opening act. So it shows you how far they came from playing those games at the Barn in the AIW to moving along.
Jim, what were your impressions of Teresa Gruntz? I know we've talked a lot about her. You heard some of the players say they were almost fearful of her just because of the intensity that she kind of had about her. What were your impressions, though?
I thought that she was an amazing leader of that team. And obviously, I mean, she was the coach, but I mean, more than that, she was one of the greatest coaches I've ever been around. I've seen different leaders in different levels, in different businesses and different sports. And she's right up there among the very best, because she inspired a loyalty among her players. She brought out the best in those players. She knew, I think, when to trust her players. I think she understood what their strengths and weaknesses were, and she didn't over micromanage them, but she was very, very clearly the one in charge, and she was an amazing coach, and one of the best coaches I have ever seen in any sport. I mean, I wouldn't hesitate to say that.
I mean, Jim, and you know this, she gave us incredible access, and And also, we didn't appreciate really how young she was at the time. You know, she was probably, as we were talking before, maybe only 8 years older than we were. But she appreciated the fact, and we referenced this, you know, in the Nightline, that it was only the year before that we, as a radio station, did all of their games home and away. WCTC at the time only did a handful of games. So she appreciated the effort that we made to really adopt them and bring them, you know, access to the student body and to Central New Jersey that they never had before. So because of that, I mean, she would invite us over to the house. We would go on road trips, long bus road trips with them. We really all felt part of that team and were welcomed. And she really didn't have to do that, but she saw the value of that for her players, and she gave us incredible access to really to practices, to how her mind worked, and you know, I think those are the things that I'll always remember and appreciate from our relationship with her.
You know, just to add to that, I have such great memories of the bus trips that we would take to various road games and being on the bus, and you could just see the spirit on the bus that the players had. And I always felt so privileged to be able to, you know, I would sit in the back of the bus and stay out of their way because I'm not on the team. But just being around that group was an amazing privilege. I felt like I was around a group of winners. And as they developed, and we, John and I in particular, we were there. We saw all 4 years of that amazing run. And we watched them grow into the champions that they became. And it was really something that I just marveled at then. And particularly looking back now, I marvel at now. The personalities. They were great players, but they were even better people from everything that I could see and experience when I was on that bus. I said, what a great group. What a great team that would be to be a part of, I always thought to myself.
Well, we're going to talk more about the players on that team and talk a little bit more about the game when we come back as we take a quick break. You're listening to Alumni Nightline talking about the 1982 Rutgers women's basketball team that won the AIAW National Championship. You're on 88.7 WRSU-FM and WRSU.org.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Before those immortal words, before his national championship team, Jim Valvano was a star at Rutgers.
3-on-1 fast break. Lloyd DeValvano, layup is good.
Join WRSU Sports for a special presentation today at 3:30 on Rutgers Day, when we bring you live inside the College Avenue gym as Rutgers dedicates the court at the Barn for Jimmy V. Join me, Gabe Sustick, and Dom Savino as we bring you the entire ceremony from start to finish. Then after the ceremonies, WRSU presents a rebroadcast of the 1967 NIT quarterfinal against New Mexico at Madison Square Garden, featuring stars Bob Lloyd, Bob Grecian, and of course, Jim Valvano. It all starts this afternoon at 3:30, right here on 88.7 WRSU-FM New Brunswick and online at WRSU.org.
Welcome back to Nightline and Alumni Nightline, talking about the 1982 Rutgers women's basketball team that won the AIAW National Championship. Hello, everybody. I'm Dominic Savino, back here with John Newman and Jeff Sadow in studio, and Jim Berman joining us from South Dakota. And guys, I want to dive into that actual game, March 28th, 1982, where the Rutgers women's basketball team beats Texas. And Jim, the first person we have to talk about, we've heard so many of her highlights, is Patty Coyle, who goes off for 30 points and is the impact player in that game. It seemed like she almost played out of her body, played the best game of her career in that one.
You know, as I was watching this unfold, and I'm, you know, you're focused, as you know, Dom, when you're doing play-by-play, you're focused on the moment. So you're focused on making sure you're painting the picture. But in the recesses of my head, I was thinking about two things. Number one was those Texas reporters who were dissing the Coyles. And I just thought to myself, how ironic. I wanted to actually just hit the pause button and just walk over to them and go, how do you like them now? And then walk back and continue with the play-by-play. But the bigger thing that I thought about was I am watching a Picasso here. I am watching a masterpiece being painted. In any championship team, there is usually a player or two, or but at least one, that is a really good player, but in the biggest moment, on the biggest stage, has the ability to raise their game to a level that they rarely get to. On this particular day, 30 points, 14 of those in the final 8.5 minutes. She shot 69% from the field, an astounding 92% from the line, well above her average in any measurable sense. On that day, I will make the case of two things. Patty Coyle became the finest college basketball player in the country. No doubt in my mind on that day. And the other thing, this was, without question, in my mind, the single greatest individual performance by a Rutgers athlete playing a team sport, certainly on a stage of that magnitude. I can't imagine there's ever been a better one. That's how good she was that day. She was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it was a phenomenal game. Jeff, John, what do you remember from that season, trying to compare this tremendous performance to what she had done that year?
It was interesting to me, you know, Mary and Patty are always sort of in the same sentence. You know, Mary was the consummate point guard. Patty was the outside shooter. They would, over the course of the year, trade off having great games, or in one game, one role was more important than the other. And it was like that really throughout their entire college career. They knew when. Each one of them knew when to step it up and when their role was important. Each one knew how to defer to each other as well as other players. Before June got hurt in her junior year, it was really her team. In that junior year, you had Chris Kirshner, then you had Terry Dorner in the big person's role. You know, Jenny Hall was sort of the unsung hero of that team. But the Coyles always knew when it was time for each one of them or both of them to step up. So that really didn't surprise me, especially as we heard before, given the fact that it was in Philadelphia, it was their final game. This was it. There was the challenge that Jim talked about earlier of going up against what was thought to be the best backcourt, arguably, in the country. And just all of those things together, I think Jim is right. Patty steps up in a way that was unexpected, but was necessary, you know, given the moment.
It goes back to something that we discussed earlier, and actually you and Jeff Gerstenblatt, Jim, on the pregame nailed it perfectly when you laid out how this was going to have to be everybody all hands on deck to win this game. And that's what you saw. It happened that Patty and then Terry Dorner were the two big guns on as far as the scoring goes, but the whole team stepped it up a notch. It was in overdrive, and listening back at the flow of the game, every time you thought that it was slipping away from them, they would claw their ways back in and they would get it done. And it was at the end, as you said, the final nails in Texas' coffin came from Patty.
You talk about that, Jeff. The one thing, Jim, that I want to get from you too, and we heard Patty say it, she said her sister Mary arguably had a better game than she did dealing with the Texas pressure, that guard tandem that the Texas beat writers thought would demolish the Coyles. It was Mary Coyle, who was the point guard, the general, who really was able to navigate through that. And it seemed like her, too, she really had one of the greatest games of her career as well.
There's no doubt. And I think in a way, Mary's performance gets lost because on the score sheet, I mean, Patty was just all world. But you're right. I mean, I think that Patty nailed it. Mary was so instrumental in that game, and she was under tremendous pressure constantly, and she just handled it. It was, you took it for granted, because watching Mary all those years, I rarely saw her have a bad game. You know, I mean, you rarely did. She was as steady and reliable of a player as I've ever seen at the point guard position. So that's why when I heard what I was hearing from the Texas people, I was thinking, I don't know that you really got this right here. You know, Mary Coyle, there is no one who can blow away the Coyles. That's what Jeff Gerstenblatt, my partner, said that day. And he couldn't have said it better. They handled the pressure brilliantly. Mary was critical. The Coyle twins were amazing that day. Amazing.
One of the other big players for Rutgers that year, I mean, she's one of the biggest names, arguably, to come out of Rutgers women's basketball, period, is June Olkowski. Maybe she didn't have the greatest game of her career in that one, but that entire season, Jim, it seemed like she was playing on one leg pretty much.
Yeah, you know, June Olkowski's story is really remarkable. Those of us who have the privilege of walking into the Rutgers Athletic Center today, and certainly younger generations, will look up and see number 45 hanging up there, and they won't really know anything about her. And that's part of the reason, frankly, why I was so passionate, and we all are so passionate about wanting to do this. It's to tell this story. June Olkowski's story is remarkable. It's remarkable. Because this was a person who was one of the greatest college basketball players in the country. That's how good she was. And then, and I'm trying to remember the exact details, but somewhere in her junior year, as I recall, she seriously injured her knee, did some significant ligament damage. And I think it was before the days of arthroscopic surgery. I don't remember that element of it real well, but I know that she was playing hurt. That 1980-81 team was actually the team that I think people thought had a chance to win a national championship. They got up to one point at number two in the country. They had Chris Kirshner for a year, who was an All-American center. They had a lot of people forget about Joanne Burke, who was a Kodak Award MVP candidate that year. They were tremendous players. And with June and the rest of them, this was going to be the year, but then June wrecked her knee. And while I can't say that's specifically the reason why they lost, that obviously had something to do with it, why they, you know, they wound up falling short out in Long Beach State in the AIAW that year. So the next year was this, okay, this is our last chance. And June played the whole year hurt. She missed 8 games. She was not even a starter, by the way, in the championship game. And down the stretch, I think she was a sixth man off the bench. So that was the real mark of her greatness. That is why, in my opinion, her number is up there. She did not let this huge setback set her back. She actually used it as a point to make herself better. She was so courageous, one of the most courageous athletes I have ever seen. She was, for those of us of a certain age who watch New York sports, I don't. This is not an exaggeration. She was Willis Reed, Mickey Mantle, and Joe Namath, all rolled into one. Great champions who had to overcome physical pain in order to perform at a high level. And that's what she did. Even though she only had 4 points in that championship game, they were big 4 points, number one, particularly the last two, clutch basket near the end of the game as Texas was making their last run. That was a huge basket in that game. I remember it like it was yesterday. And she was just unbelievable on the board. She was flying all over the place. She was stealing balls. She did so much more than what was on the score sheet. She was a true champion.
And Jim, she had an over the head, behind the back pass, apparently, from your play-by-play description, to ice one of those baskets. But she had arthroscopic knee surgery 3 weeks before the AIAW tournament. And that's why she was not starting, and that's why she was coming off the bench. And it was interesting, right before the Final Four, she was interviewed, and she was asked how the different role was suiting her. And she said, it is very different, because you're being asked to come off the bench and produce immediately. When you come off that bench, they expect something from you to change the dynamic of the game. And it was an adjustment for her because she was not used to that. And she embraced it. And as you saw, she was the glue at the end there.
Let me tell you about that pass, if I could. You just brought back that memory. And I, of course, when I listened to the play-by-play again, I remember that so well. I am still in absolute awe. And one day I'd love to have the chance to sit down with June Olkowski and go, how the heck did you do that? But actually, I already know the answer. They just all had such a feel for each other. They knew where they were going to be on the court. It's like the way people describe the early 70s Knicks. They just knew where each other was going to be. June didn't have to look at where Patty Coyle was. She knew exactly. She throws it over her head. I literally had no words to describe it. It was one of the most stunning plays I've ever seen.
you know, I had a chance to reconnect with her at a football game in College Park about 5 months ago, and she was there with some very young relatives of hers who really didn't know the role that she played. And I just looked at them and I said, she was the best college basketball player in Rutgers history, period. And not only her play, but the fact that she, I thought, was, you know, the soul of that team and really willed them to what they did by, you know, being an example for them, whether it was on the bench and was the second coach. And in those final minutes of that game, she really was the person that pushed them over the finish line. I truly believe that.
There's no doubt. That's absolutely correct.
One of the other things you guys mentioned, too, how with that, especially with that behind the back pass, it almost seemed like they all knew where the other players were on the court at all times. And one of the things we've heard from talking to the Coyles, and you heard from Chris Daly as well, is they played a lot together, not just from playing together on the team for 3 years, but also in that summer leading up, working camps with Teresa, mentoring the kids, and then when the kids were gone, playing pickup of their own to kind of get a bigger feel for them. And it seemed like the fact that there were so many seniors on the court at that time, not just the fact that it would be their last game no matter the result, but also the accrued 4 years of experience together, really set them above a Texas team that may have had a ton of premier athletes, but was not a senior-laden bunch that had that built-up experience, Jim.
Yeah, you know, that there's no doubt. That you nailed it, and that's exactly what it was. This was the classic example of you could make the case, and this is certainly no offense to the Lady Knight team by any stretch, but I think I got the sense that Teresa Grenz was implying this. You can make the case that Texas, player for player, may have had more talent if you were to, like, do a choose-up game of, like, pick the best talent. Texas might have had more raw talent, but that Lady Knight team, with their experience and the way they played together, the whole was the greater than the sum of their parts, I believe. They just were one of those special teams that just knew how to play together to get the job done. They still had great players. There's no doubt about that. But and also the other thing is for Texas, they were a very young team. And, you know, the interesting thing with Texas is that that was kind of the beginning of their ascendancy. They had a great run, which culminated in a national championship 4 years later, which Annette Smith, actually, who was the big star, she had to sit out a year because she blew out her knee, apparently, and that she was able to come back and 4 years later won her national championship in 1986, which I thought was an interesting little irony there. But yeah, that's, you nailed it exactly.
All right, with that, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, a lot more to still talk about with the 1982 Rutgers women's basketball team, particularly the impact of the AIAW National Championship win. You're hearing it all right here on 88.7 WRSU-FM and WRSU.org.
It's Rutgers Day 2017, and WRSU is your place for live local music. Join us at 11 a.m. for a live broadcast from Bishop Beach on College Avenue. First, it's the Young Picassos. At noon, it's the Vaughns. Followed by the Brian Hansen Band at 1.
What's one it take to get you back together again?
And Johnny Cola at 2.
Saw her standing there, hair fell long, not again.
The best Rutgers and New Brunswick has to offer, live today from 11 to 4 at Bishop Beach on College Avenue. Stop by for free giveaways and tours of WRSU. That's Rutgers Day on 88.7 WRSU-FM New Brunswick and WRSU.org.
And I'm Rutgers University President Robert Barchi, and you're listening to Rutgers Radio on 88.7 WRSU-FM in New Brunswick.
Welcome back to WRSU special about the 1982 Rutgers women's basketball team that won the AIAW National Championship. I'm Dominic Savino, and you heard a lot of great stuff today. both halves of that game from the Palestra on March 28, 1982. You heard from a bunch of different players, sports writers, to Coach Teresa Grenz as well, talking about their experiences. And now, to put a bow on it, it's Alumni Nightline with Jeff Sadow, John Newman, and calling in from South Dakota, Jim Berman. A pleasure to be with all you guys. And you think back to this team, such a monumental win. We've said so much about it. This was really a tremendous period in Rutgers women's basketball history. I mean, they got to ring the bells at Old Queens, too. Do you think anybody really had a sense at that time that this would be such a big win?
No, you know, I really don't think so. There was a lot of continuation of success after this. You know, referenced before the Wicks and Sticks era that came a handful of years later. You know, it was definitely the end of that era in a lot of ways, as we've referenced before, not only for Rutgers women's basketball, the end of those 4 years, the end of all those careers of, you know, the women that we sort of grew up with while we were in school, but also the culmination coming in that game, but also a shift in women's sports period and women and the beginning of women's basketball and an era that we now see played out, you know, every year on ESPN with tons of coverage and, you know, nationally known coaches and all that kind of stuff. But at the time, you know, and we've spent a lot of time researching and trying to remember what happened all those years ago, you know, we didn't really appreciate. I don't think there was definitely not the great appreciation on campus for what is still now the only major sport national championship in the school's history.
And the campus itself, the student body itself, did not appreciate this team. Their fans and anybody who went to attend the games were mostly outsiders and fans from the general public and the vicinity. So this was the beginning of bringing awareness to the campus of a championship caliber team year in and year out. And as the fortunes of the men's program sank, you then saw the rising tide and the campus getting behind the Lady Knights and now the Scarlet Knights, as they're called.
Jim, where do you put this Rutgers women's basketball team? How do you contextualize it in the history of that program?
You know, I'll even take it a step further beyond just the history of the program. If you look at that four-year period, 1978-79 to 1981-82, that winning percentage that team had, 108 wins, 22 losses, an 831 winning percentage. You had four straight years being ranked in the top 10. I think you could easily make the case, and I'm going to just come right out and say it, and we can debate it. I think you can easily make the case that this was the greatest four-year era in any Rutgers sport. And there were other great four-year eras in Rutgers women's basketball, both under Coach Grenz and, of course, under Coach Stringer. But I believe that this was the greatest when you look at it just from a record perspective. And the other thing that stands out to me is that this is a reminder not only of what was, but what can be. That Rutgers can win national championships. Rutgers can do this. And as we move forward as a school that is pursuing, you know, those great opportunities in the Big Ten, we've done it before, folks, and we can do it again.
You know, and I think
Hold on. Go.
And based on what Jim's talking about, you know, the logical comparisons are 76 men's basketball, which made the Final Four but didn't make it all the way, and we celebrate the undefeated regular season leading up to the Final Four. The 76 football team, which didn't go anywhere because they didn't really play anybody, but they beat everybody who they played. And then later on with Vivian taking the team, her team, to the Final Four, and 06 football. Those are, for good or for bad, the bellwether teams to compare against. And this was the only team to go all the way. And when you look at it that way, and what Jim is talking about, just that four-year win-loss building up to what they eventually did, I think you can easily make the case for this being the best team in Rutgers sports history.
I have to agree wholeheartedly. There is no way you can dispute that. success on the field for Rutgers has not been plentiful over the years. And we see that as we've walked into the Big Ten and we're against traditions at Michigan and Ohio State. And these are the moments that we need to reflect back on and we need to use as the model for the future. And I think we have a really, really big upside coming here at Rutgers. And hopefully the fan base and the students will be patient because it can be there and it will be there.
And I'm going to say one more thing about this. They also launched a program. I mean, literally, I mean, there was really no program. They launched the program and all the greatness. I mean, it's been almost, without only a couple of exceptions, a lengthy run since that moment of greatness when it comes to Rutgers women's basketball. It was all because of that group. That's how it got started. And the other thing is, how many teams can say, well, not only did we launch a program, we launched a fan club. They became so popular that the Cagers formed during that time, and they were the Lady Knights were so popular that there was a group of people that said, we want to follow them wherever they go and bring some attention to them. And, you know, I don't think the Cagers get enough credit. They have been a very loyal group for a long, long time, and because of that team, the Cagers became something. And then I would say because of the Cagers, it has continued to perpetuate. And I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, Jim, I think you make a great point. Inarguably one of the greatest 4 years that a Rutgers program has ever had. And before we get out of here, I want to thank a couple people who helped put this together. The players and coaches that we were able to talk to. Mary Coyle, Pat Coyle, Chris Daly, Patty Delahanty, and Coach Teresa Grenz. Sports writers Mel Greenberg and Paul Franklin. And you guys for joining us on this Alumni Nightline. Jeff Sadow, John Newman, and Jim Berman from South Dakota. Our broadcast administrator, Mike Pavlichko, sitting next to me helping us put this all together. It's been quite a ride, and it's been a lot of fun talking about the 1982 Rutgers women's basketball team that won the AIAW National Championship. That'll do it for us here on our special. A lot more great programming coming up today on Rutgers Day here on WRSU. In a couple minutes, we'll go live from Bishop Beach with 4 hours of live local bands, followed by a rebroadcast of the 1967 NIT quarterfinal win for the Rutgers men's basketball team against New Mexico. All of that coming up on Rutgers Day here at WRSU, 88.7 WRSU FM and WRSU.org.